You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It is 8/17/21. Well, let's hear from an economic expert, a professor of finance at a college in New Jersey, Michael Bussler, PhD. Let's find out how well the current administration's economic plans are working out here. And Dr. Bussler, you are a professor of finance at Stockton University in New Jersey, my former home state in which I grew up in. You teach finance and economics, and maybe the current administration could use your services.
Well, thanks for having me on, Terry, and I know it's my pleasure to be here. So let's take a look at where we are. There's on the good side, the economy is growing very well. It grew about at a 6.5% annual rate the first 6 months of this year. Looks like, depending on what happens to the virus, looks like it'll do that much or better for the rest of the year. The problem we have is inflation. So how bad is the problem? Based on July inflation numbers, prices are up about 5.5% over what they were July 2020. Now, the Federal Reserve's target's 2-3%, so we're way above that. Why aren't they doing anything about it? Well, the current administration, as well as the Federal Reserve, believe that the problem is temporary. They use the word transitory. Why do they say that? They say that the inflation is caused by disruptions in the supply chain. In other words, because of COVID, factories had to shut down. They couldn't make anything. Because of the severe weather we had in the winter, factories had to shut down. They weren't making anything. As a result, the economy has come back, so there's plenty of demand, but business hasn't caught up with the supply yet. That's why prices are going up. The administration and the Federal Reserve feel as soon as the economy fully reopens, and we're just about there now, as soon as it fully reopens, the supply will increase, the inflation problem will go away, so they don't have to do anything about it, is their view. I don't have that view, and many other people don't either. And why is that? Because I believe there are at least four other reasons why we have inflation, and those reasons aren't going to go away anytime soon. What are those reasons? The federal government has declared war on fossil fuels. They canceled the Keystone Pipeline. You can't drill on federal lands anymore. You can't drill on the Alaska Shelf. So they want to reduce the supply of fossil fuels. But when you reduce the supply of something at a time when the economy and the U.S. and the world are growing, that increased demand, restricted supply will lead to higher prices. We've already seen higher prices at the gas pump. We're likely to see even higher prices going forward. Not only does that affect our purchase of gasoline and heating oil, but it also means that manufacturers are paying more for energy. So the cost of manufacture goes up. That'll have to push prices up. And even retailers will be paying more because they get things delivered by truck. Trucks are going to pay more for fuel. So the cost of delivery will go up. That will lead to a continued inflation problem. So that's one reason. Second reason, the Federal Reserve has increased the money supply by more than 20% in the last year. And they do that by buying approximately $120 billion per month of government bonds, and they get the money to do that simply by printing up dollars. It's done electronically. That's a vast increase in the money supply. At the same time, they're keeping interest rates near zero. And what that's doing is causing some products that are interest rate sensitive to see huge inflation. For instance, in the housing market, the average family of four received over $11,000 in free money from the government in the last year, whether they were negatively impacted by the virus or not, negatively impacted financially by the virus or not. Most of that money has been saved. So somebody says, look, I wasn't considering buying a house, but I can get a 2% mortgage. and the government just gave me the money for a down payment. Now's the time to buy. So you have a bunch of people rushing into the housing market. All that excess demand has pulled prices up. Same thing in the automobile market. You can get a 0% loan. Government gave you enough for a down payment. More people are looking to buy new cars, pulling up new car prices. So the second reason was a loose and expansive monetary policy and keeping interest rates zero. Third reason why we have inflation. The federal government spent $3 trillion more than they took in revenue last year. They took in $3.5 trillion, spent $6.5 trillion, took in $3 trillion, or spent rather $3 trillion more than they took in, and they'll spend another $3 trillion or more this year. $6 trillion in deficit spending on a $21 trillion economy is also highly inflationary. And the fourth reason is companies that are reopening are trying to get their workers to come back, particularly lower income workers. These workers are finding that they're making more money being unemployed because they get unemployment compensation and they get an extra $300 from the federal government weekly. So it simply doesn't pay them to go back to work. So what does business have to do? They have to raise the wages to try to get them back. So an entry-level position may start at $14 an hour. They can't get any people, so they have to raise it to $18 an hour to get people. That drives up their labor costs. And somebody who's been working there a year or two says, hey, I'm worth $4 or $5 an hour more than a new person, so you have to raise my wages. You get wages going up, and that pushes prices up. So because high energy prices, a loose monetary policy, huge government deficit spending, and wage inflation, I think inflation is going to be here for some time unless the Federal Reserve acts relatively quickly.
You know what I say, Professor, the best things in life are transitory.
And that's what the current administration seems to think too, I guess.
Yeah, well, to think that you can expand the money supply by 20% that we know of, not to mention buying up $120 billion worth of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, right, which is also highly expansionary, and that you're not going to have a major upsurge in inflation is like what Dr. Johnson said about second mortgages, the triumph of hope over experience.
Yeah, I don't know what they're thinking. The real shock to me, I can understand the current administration perhaps thinking like that, but the real shock to me is the Federal Reserve. Historically, when the Federal Reserve's tried to manage the money supply really beginning in 1980, and they've done a great job because inflation has been relatively low for the last 40 years up until now. Always when there's even a hint of inflation, the Federal Reserve will move to head it off. Like at the end of 2016, there was a hint we might get some inflation. The Federal Reserve says we're raising interest rates. Between the end of 2016 and the end of 2018, they raised interest rates 8 times, a quarter of a point each time. And they said this was successful. It took enough demand out of the economy to reduce inflation, they argue, but not enough demand to really slow economic growth. So they've always been ahead of this. This is the first time since 1980, which is modern history with monetary policy, that the Federal Reserve is just letting this go. And it's running wild. In the month of June, the consumer price index went up 0.9% in 1 month. If it did that for all 12 months, that's over a 10% inflation rate. It went down to 0.5% in July, but that's still over a 6% inflation rate. They think the problem is going to go away once the economy reopens. For the reasons I gave, I don't agree with them. And I think the Federal Reserve, who said they're not going to do anything till 2023 or the end of 2022, I think in their September meeting, they're going to talk about reducing these bond purchases and starting to raise interest rates.
Well, that's interesting. But we know every time they attempt to raise rates in the current environment, the stock market collapses or appears to be on its way to a collapse. And that is probably the only bright side of the economy. It seems to me, Professor, as the real economy does worse, the stock market does better. So it's kind of an inverse future indicator now, where it used to be a leading indicator of future economic activity.
Well, I think the stock market is doing so well because corporate profits are up by a huge amount. They're soaring. What happened last year, a lot of companies said, hey, we can't operate in the office. We have to send everybody home. What they found was worker productivity increased significantly. So they were finding they were not in a hurry to bring workers back because they were getting more work done when they're not in their office, and they were saving all that expense. And you're starting to see in metropolitan areas a glut of office space because some of these companies are saying maybe some of our employees can work remotely into the future. And that looks like it's a good deal for us. They're more productive, and we don't have to pay for the office space. So corporate profits went way up. They soared. They're continuing to be at record levels for many large corporations. And really, what the price someone is willing to pay for a share of stock depends on a bunch of things. But the primary factor is how much income is this stock going to earn in the future? And if they believe that future income is going to go up, they're willing to pay more for the stocks. I think that's what's happening here. Even a slight increase in interest rates going up gradually, I don't think will have a significant negative impact on the stock market.
All right. Well, also, we have the fact that the rates are so low, there really is no other alternative for many investors out there except the stock market. That's known as TINA. There is no alternative. Exactly. Or perhaps cryptocurrencies, or maybe precious metals are going to come back, although they've been slammed lately. So you don't have a lot of choices in this repressive environment, do you?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Trilogy Metals is a world-class developer in Alaska's Ambler Mining District. The company already possesses 8 billion pounds of copper, 3 billion pounds of zinc, over 1 million gold equivalent ounces, and now over 77 million pounds of cobalt. Trilogy's Arctic project boasts an after-tax net present value of $1.4 billion with a 33% IRR. Trilogy is led by an experienced management team with proven success in discovering and developing projects in Alaska. The company is well capitalized, has no debt, and possesses strong institutional support. Trilogy trades on the New York and Toronto exchanges under the ticker symbol TMQ. To learn more, go to TrilogyMetals.com. That's TrilogyMetals.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
No, and you're right. As interest rates go up, bonds will become more attractive, and that will take some money out of the stock market. So I don't think raising rates will destroy the stock market. I don't see any big crash, but it will tend to temper some of the increases that we've seen in recent months even. Look, the stock market's at record levels now.
Yes, that's for sure. Well, you know, I guess maybe if you sent workers to prison, you could probably even increase the productivity rate even higher, because short of eating and going out to the yard every now and then, they had nothing to do but work, right?
Exactly.
So, but that's not really a solution.
I'm not sure that's a viable solution, but in principle, it looks good.
Yeah. Hey, well, think what would happen to productivity then. You just send all your employees to jail. You don't even have to let them sleep there. They could just go there for two meals a day. So you cut down on money. I mean, maybe the company town is the way to go. That long lost tool of corporate oppression known as the company town.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see too many of those in the future. They, they worked years ago when you had like steel mills being built and new labor-intensive automobile factories being built. It made sense to have the town around there where people live, and it was a one-company town. But most people conclude that because there's a lack of economic opportunity, the one-company town is really not the best way to go.
Unless it's in a town where Tesla is. That seems, you know, I wanted to get your opinion on that. That really is the first new major industrial company in the United States in nearly 20 years. I'm talking about a company that just actually builds products, major products, complicated products, and has a proprietary edge over the competition. You know, they were able to do that using subsidies and with, you know, using the advantages that they had in their people and technology and vision.
Yeah, and they've set up a capital-intensive manufacturing facility where there's not a whole lot of labor. There's mostly robots on the assembly line putting these cars together. That's really a high-tech way to do it. It keeps your manufacturing costs relatively stable because obviously the robots don't ask for raises every year. So it keeps your manufacturing costs stable, and it also ends up turning out a higher quality product because the robots do it exactly the same way every time. You know, it brings up one quick point. In order for manufacturing to come back from places like China, we can't compete with labor because, you know, they pay $1 an hour where we average pay $25 or $30 an hour. So we can't compete like that. But we can compete making our factories capital intensive. That is, we have robots on the assembly line rather than people. In order to do that, companies need capital. And if the federal government keeps deficit spending and running up this huge public debt and taking capital out of capital markets, there may not be enough capital for business to expand. That tends to stagnate the economy. That could lead to a problem we had back in the 70s, which was a stagflation. From a stagnant economy with high inflation. That's really what my biggest fear is with all this today.
Yeah, well, at some point they're going to have to act. It's just the only good thing is, or maybe good for the dollar, is that the world is debasing its currencies. All of our trading partners, all the major economies of the world are debasing their currencies at least at the same rate as the U.S., if not higher. And how much longer can all this mutual debasement, it's really mutually assured currency destruction that we're looking at?
Yeah, this is something else that can't go on too much longer. Eventually, the system will tend to right all this. You just wonder what ends up happening. If the Federal Reserve has to take more dramatic action to reduce inflation, that could bring on a recession. And there's some problems, obviously, associated with that.
Oh, yeah. We got a world of trouble ahead. And it's important to understand these trends were in place. They have nothing really. They have somewhat to do with politics, because certainly anti-petroleum, hydrocarbon energy policy. But a lot of the other issues that we talked about really have been in place since before the current administration. So not to shift to blame away from the current regime, because it's their mess now. And then, let's face it, they did inherit a mess, but they haven't necessarily done anything to fix it, have they?
No, in fact, they've made it worse. And so if we go back to the basic principles that really made this country great, we would fix a lot of this. Real quick, you take a look at the big picture here. The U.S. went from the birth of a nation to the number one largest, most prosperous economy in the world in about 150 years. You had some countries that were hundreds, in some cases thousands of years older. That happened, I believe, because of four basic principles. One, we encouraged individual freedom. As long as you didn't infringe upon anybody else's rights, you can pretty much do what you wanted to do. Secondly, we encouraged individual responsibility. As long as you were mentally and physically able, everybody took care of themselves. Thirdly, we had low rates of taxation. So whenever you earned something, you knew you got to keep most of it. And fourthly, we had a limited role for government, certain public goods like defense of the country, a legal system. But the government provided. Other than that, they stayed out of the way. So individual freedom, individual responsibility, low rates of taxation, and a limited role for government, I think, are what made the country great. The current administration is doing exactly opposite to all of those things. They want to take over the healthcare market, the education market. Once the government takes it over, you're going to lose individual freedom because they're going to tell you what to do. Secondly, the government wants to take care of everybody. So instead of individual responsibility, they're looking for social responsibility, again, opposite to what made the country great. Thirdly, to pay for this, the current administration says, I'm only going to raise taxes on people making over 400,000. The problem is that's only about 1.5% of the population. Eventually, everybody's taxes are going to have to go up. So they're going to have high rates of taxation rather than low. And instead of a limited role for government, you're going to have government taking over all these markets. People say, well, things will be cheaper when the government does it because the government's not motivated by profit. It's exactly the opposite. Because they're not motivated by profit, they don't care what the cost is. So the cost ends up going up. Business is motivated by profit. And as a result of that, they try to produce at the lowest possible cost. So the current administration wants to do everything that's really against the principles that made the country great. And I think that's why we're going into all these problems that we have.
I couldn't agree with you more, Professor, and really appreciate you coming on. Hopefully common sense will prevail. If it doesn't prevail voluntarily, then markets and other forces will force it upon the country and the world. And I just hope we don't have to go through too much torture and pain for that to happen again. Hey, if you got any questions for the good professor, just send me an email to kl@carrylutz.com. Professor, is there a place where people can find your work, your writing, and interact?
I tweet out all of my columns. So if you go to @mbusler, @mbusler, you can find all my columns. Also, if you're on Facebook, I have a page called Funding Democracy. So search for Funding Democracy. All my columns are there, and I'd be happy if anybody followed me.
Excellent. Hey, and don't forget, sign up for our free newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Professor, it's always great to speak with you. Good luck. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.